ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The ABC AFL Daily Podcast with Ben Cameron, the former Hawk and Blue, former Carlton AFLW coach Daniel Harford, and Harf, we are launching straight into it with all of our takeaways from round eight of the AFL season, starting with the game I've just broadcast here at the SCG, Sydney defeating Melbourne by 17 points. And my main takeaway is this: the new rules are working if you like scoring, and we do.
100% correct, Benny. Great to chat to you just by the way. But absolutely, Greg Swan and Andrew Dillon and Laura Kane, whoever else is in charge of the game, are sitting there wetting their pants currently. They're having to mop up wet pants because of what they saw at the SCG this afternoon. The scoreline was off the charts. 100-plus points again for both teams. That's what they've seemingly wanted to see. Greg Swan was talking about it the other night when he was fronting the media after a pretty ordinary week for headquarters. 131 to 114. It was a significant goal-scoring fest, and the fans loved it. Sydney Sweeney was in the crowd. She's having a great time. The US actress, don't worry about, I saw that, mate. Don't worry about that. But that's what they want. They want goals. They want lots of them, and they're getting them at the moment in the way the game has been played. So if you like that stuff, which I sort of do, but I don't mind a bit more of a physical contest every now and then you have an hell of a time.
Oh, I didn't even recognise Sydney Sweeney. So how am I going? I said, oh, is that a celebrity in the crowd that everyone's cheering about? And it had to be pointed out to me. So that was a whiff. But the high scoring game at the end.
She texted me and said she was going to be there, mate. So it's probably, yeah, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yep, Errol Goulden charged around there and presented her a 21 jumper with Sweeney on the back, a Sydney jumper, of course. The highest scoring game at the SCG since 2007, I'm led to believe, 36 goals kicked over the course of the afternoon. The eighth time in 2026 we've had both teams score 100 points. Last year for the entirety, we've been tracking this number, half. We only had five games where both teams kicked 100 points. So that isn't insignificant. What we were looking at
in this round, Benny, West Coast, the Bulldogs and Freo the other night was also 100 plus each. So that's twice in the round.
Certainly is. We're seeing a lot more of it. So all of the rules are working as intended. Coming into the game, we were very much looking at the ruck battle. Max Gawn taking on Brody Grundy. Game 250 for Brody Grundy up against his former side. How would it play out? The eight-time, maybe soon to be nine-time All-Australian up against the dual All-Australian and former teammate of his. And really over the course of the afternoon, half, it felt like Grundy might have just got the better of him.
Not just might have, Benny. He did get the better of him. He had 45 hit-outs, he had 26 disposals, kicked a goal. Now, I know Maxie had two goals. He only had 22 hit-outs, 9 contested, 15 contested for Brody. I think he was the dominant big man on the ground in terms of the battle between those two. So I thought he won the battle in game number 250 and was well-received by the fans as well. They gave him some love through the back end of the game when he got a touch of the footy. No, he was fabulous. We've often lauded the Q4 King, Maxie Gawn. Not even he could get it done for his team this evening against Sydney. So, no, hats off to Brody Grundy. Did a hell of a job from start to finish. Such a pivotal player for the Sydney Swans. We've often talked about their attack and their flow and their speed of ball and all that sort of stuff. But his role in igniting a lot of that, but also just being the link player for a lot of it as well, is pretty critical to what they're doing. And I reckon Dean Cox would be loving the work of the big fella.
Yeah, so they only had 63 ruck battles over the course of the afternoon, and Grundy won the hit-outs when they went head-to-head 29-20, but really it was his work around the ground where he dominated, which Simon Goodwin forecast with us pre-game that's where he thought Grundy could get Gawn. 26 disposals, 11 clearances, 15 of those possessions contested, and a goal as well. So he was mighty, Brody Grundy. Does it change who is currently wearing the All-Australian blazer for 2026 at the moment, half?
I'm not a massive fan of the rolling All-Australian type concept, Benny, so I don't really care. I don't really care who wears the round eight version or the round seven version, whatever round we're, I can't remember anymore. I don't care. But what it does do is broaden the conversation, which I think is a healthy thing to do, to look outside of Big Macs. We all love Big Macs, none more than me. But we've got to look outside, not just be streamed into thinking that Max is the best because he's been the best. Let's worry about what happens through the year. We've still got another 17-18 weeks to go in the season. So this 7 and 8 week rolling All-Australian thing, not really my cup of tea, but Brody's in front today.
Okay, I like it. Malcolm Roses booted 7 goals as well, which has been reduced to a footnote on our discussion of this game. But we asked him post-game who was actually playing on him because no one was around him, and this was his answer.
I forgot his name.
You don't need to know his name, don't worry. Right. He needs to know your name.
No. So that's one of the great answers of all time, isn't it, Benny? He couldn't give two rats who was on him. He was just going to be out there and beat him. 7 goals. He had his Ben Ronk moment from all those years ago against the Hawks at the MCG. Who knows if he'll back it up and go again. Ben wasn't able to do it too many times, but we wish Malcolm the best of that. It was great fun. 5 of the first 8 he kicked today in the game. Set of the light early and then finished off with a couple late as well. So good on him. And why would you bother worrying about your opponent when you're going to kick 7 snags anyway?
Yeah, I agree. Overrated. You do think as well, just quickly before we move on from this game, that Stephen King, speaking of another Malcolm, is the new Malcolm Blight, don't you, with the way he's coaching this team?
100%. He couldn't give a fat rat's clacker about any goals that gets kicked against him. He just wants to kick one more than the opposition. Now, it didn't work today, but it's worked pretty well so far this season. And the way that they keep attacking Melbourne, they've got no interest in shutting down games. They want to keep the game in flow. They want to attack and get the ball and score every time they get their hands on it. So that's what I've noticed. And you and I have seen a lot of Melbourne games live this season. It's what we've noticed in the games at the MCG on Sunday at 3:15, their traditional time slot, although today was at the SCG, not the MCG. And they did it again today. They were a long way off at one stage, 4 or 5 goals down late in the game. They get back to within a kick, and it was game on, Donkey Kong stuff. So I think he's the modern version of Malcolm Blight. He wants to kick goals, and I think that's good.
It's actually a rat's toss bag for Blighty, not a fat's rack's clacker. Remember with Blighty all of those years ago on the fifth quarter? Last night, half, the game between Carlton and St Kilda, and our takeaway out of this game is it happened again. It happened again. A fifth time this year that Carlton have led at halftime and lost. An 11th time since the start of 2025 they've led at the main break and gone on to lose.
Yeah, a disastrous outcome again for Michael Voss and his team. And for the Carlton fans, let's be honest, they're the ones who are feeling as much of the pain as anyone from what's happening at the Blues just at the minute. And you can see, almost see it coming very early in the third quarter. You can start to see some cracks appearing in the Carlton midfield. Their pressure rating was down, and all of a sudden Saints had some momentum and some energy and were really direct in their attacking style too. They put the Blues to the sword pretty quickly in that third term. But you just can't have that happen. It was 8 or 9 unanswered goals again for Carlton. Michael Voss was talking about it through the middle of the week in preparation for the game about having to stop that and understanding the need to stop that, but they couldn't stop that. And a lot of it went back to effort intensity. And Vossie was pretty vocal after the game too. There was a real shift in his narrative and his evolution of his commentary after the game. He's been really gentle, I reckon, and positive with the players and about the players in post-game presses, despite the fact they've been getting monstered a couple of weeks. Last night, he wasn't. He was pretty direct and said it was fairly and squarely on the players and their effort and their work rate and their pressure. And I think that's a big shift in the way he's addressing the players through the media.
Yeah, there was a lot in this game as well. Obviously, both of the Silvanis, that's Jack and Stephen, coming up against their old mob in Carlton, and also TDK, the first time he's played against Carlton since leaving on that big money deal. It was the best game that Marshall and TDK have played together at St Kilda. Moving on from that match, the Saturday afternoon game half between Brisbane and Essendon was a 64-point, very comfortable win for Brisbane, the two-time reigning premiers over Essendon. But I think what I took out of this game was that you can never predict the stories of a footy season. Whiteboard gate was not on my bingo card. Now, the question is, though, is this a big deal or no big deal?
In my view, it's not a big deal. It was never for public consumption. It's information that players give to other players through the week just to give them a heads up about what's coming their way from an opposition personnel perspective. And sometimes you'll write remarks quite flippantly because you're not really worrying about how it sort of reads. You want the sentiment of the comment to make sense to the player who's reading or absorbing that information. So it's not supposed to be something you're going to publish in an article somewhere online or in the newspaper. It's not supposed to be written to that grammatical and sentimental sensitive sort of correction. So no massive issue. It's disappointing that it happened. I think a lot of clubs will be annoyed about this, not just the Brisbane Lions. I think a lot of clubs will be a bit mindful about how they interact or let people from outside their bubble engage with their environment in the preparation for a game or on game day. So it's going to have a bit of a backlash, I think, for that. But it'll be a 24-hour, 48-hour story. Some of the TV shows will have a crack at it, I'm sure. But in the end, it doesn't mean much.
My main takeaway from just about the whole thing, Half, was the truth hurts. The truth hurts, doesn't it? Like, labelling Zach Merritt selfish, Kyle Langford selfish. For anyone who hasn't seen the story, there was a whiteboard inside the training facility at Springfield where the Brisbane Lions are based. It had the opposition of Essendon, every player and number. Left footers pointed out, which is wise too, Half, because how often the lefties turn onto their left and players don't seem to know. And it had a strengths column and a weaknesses column for every player. And alongside Zach Merritt, it said selfish. Kyle Langford said selfish for his weakness as well. Strength said versatile. The one in question was mainly around Jackson Pryor. It had his partner's name written alongside his name as a strength. And then he was listed as a bit of a hothead, which I think Sam Durham was as well. But Auskick Tours had been going through there. A parent had taken a photo, shared it online. It went viral from there. But generally, Half, I think the truth hurts. And that the other big one, I should say, was Ben Mackay, who had, just in block letters, low on confidence, which I think is fair.
Yeah, that's not exactly news to anyone. I wouldn't have thought that's news, that Ben Mackay's low on confidence. The whole footy world's seen that for the last 2.5 years. So I wouldn't think that's especially groundbreaking for Ben to come across either, just by the way. But the fact that that's written for consumption by opposition players, maybe he might be annoyed by that. I don't think he would be. I must admit, I don't think he'd have any concern about that being written up, because he would know, like everyone in football, that he is low on confidence. So what's the matter with that?
Yeah. Here's a little sample of what everyone had to say about it. Firstly, Dane Zorko, who we interviewed post-game, then Chris Fagan, and then Brad Scott.
Yeah, we were made aware of that last night. And we were obviously really disappointed that, you know, we allow external programs to come in and use our state-of-the-art facility. So the fact that someone needed felt the need to, you know, it was probably harmless, but the fact that it filtered in, it's not new for us. We've done an opposition board for a number of years. Ever since Fage has been at our football club, we want to know a little bit more about our opposition that we're playing. And, we're obviously really disappointed with that, but, you know, we put that to bed this morning and we've got to work.
Did you hear about it on field? Did any of the Essendon guys reference it?
Nah, mate, I mean, like, if you're going to let that sort of stuff get caught up in trying to execute your game plan, the game's way too hard. For those that have played it, it's way too hard to be worried about what was said on a whiteboard. I don't think there was anything too derogatory towards anyone. Just gives us a better understanding of the opposition we're coming up against. So, yeah, look, if you're going to use that as motivation, you're probably going down the wrong path, I reckon.
What I'll probably say is I'm not going to comment about what was written on that whiteboard, because from our perspective, it's private information. You know, somebody illegally took photos of information that was on a whiteboard and then decided to make a hero of themselves and put it out in the public domain, all right? I reckon it's a little unfair when it's your workplace and it's what you do every day, and it's information that we keep internal, and we've been doing it for 9 years. We've been writing the strengths and vulnerabilities of opposition players up on a whiteboard. I'm not going to comment on isolated things that were written on it. I can promise you, though, that nothing was written up there that there was anything sinister in mind or degrading in mind at all. And that's where I'll stay with that.
Do you feel the need to address it with Jackson? He's a former player.
I spoke to Jackson out on the field after the game, as did a lot of our players, and had a bit of a laugh and a joke together. So, I'm happy for you to go and ask Jackson what he thinks.
Well, my understanding is Brisbane have done that for 6, 7, 8 years. So that's nothing new. They do that for every team, I imagine. But I think it's a problem for them to deal with, not for us. I wouldn't want that coming out of our building. Like, as I said, they do it for every opposition. So, it's a tough game, and it's sometimes a psychological game too. And you know that if that's what's identified about you, then if you're a competitor, you respond to it. We'd prefer a little more detail, maybe better handwriting.
And Brad Scott, ironically half, just in one of the twists that only the footy world could throw up, was later that night, after being very strong on all of this, inducted into the Brisbane Lions Hall of Fame. That night.
Yep. Yeah, how good's footy, eh? How good's footy for just throwing up stories? You talk about Whiteboard Gate being one of the stories you weren't expecting. Well, I wasn't expecting Brad Scott to be inducted into the Hall of Fame after Whiteboard Gate on the same night. So it is. It just keeps throwing things up. He was a fantastic player, of course. Brad used to terrorise the bugger out of me when I was playing against him at the Hawks back in the old days. He used to tag me and tag the life out of me, he used to do. So he's annoying, but a worthy recipient of Hall of Fame acknowledgement from the Brisbane Lions, but funny on the night of that. To have it happen was very funny.
Just a last one on it before we move on. So there were two types of handwriting on it. It was a very messy I think calling it cursive would be generous, in black whiteboard marker. And then there was a red sort of block letter, which that looked a lot like a coach's writing. The other one looked like a player. Oh, it just, did it seem to you like maybe Brad Scott knew who the player was? And I don't know. It just seemed to me like he knew what he was saying there, Brad Scott. Maybe not. I don't know. How would you know who wrote it? Only Brisbane would know.
I don't know. I would have thought that a lot of feedback would have gone in, and players would have been able to just go up and write on those boxes on the whiteboard if they thought they had something to add to the conversation. What I would have loved to have seen, and I'm a bit of a stickler for this stuff. I've got a bit of OCD when it comes to this stuff. I would have loved to see the weaknesses in red pen, red texter, and the strengths in green. That's what I would like to see, just to add a little bit of real class to it and expertise to it. Just a bit of color coding. Reds for bad, greens for good.
That's the attention to detail that's just so often lost, half. I like the way you're thinking there. I absolutely agree with you on all of that. An interesting point too was Chris Fagan saying that he got the idea from a week he spent with Eddie Jones. So Eddie Jones did it when he was coaching England, and that's where Chris Fagan got the idea, brought it back to Brisbane. Earlier on in the day, an afternoon game out west at Perth Stadium, and Richmond winning by 11 points over the West Coast Eagles. And my immediate takeaway watching this game is that this was just a phenomenal performance for Richmond, a heart and soul performance, considering their injury list half. 17 players on it before the game, 18 by early in the fourth quarter when Dion Prestia did his calf, and they went on to win.
Yeah, and they had to come back late in the game too to do it. So it was a great performance, and there was some speculation that Richmond might not win a game because of injury list, as you touched on, but also their form leading into it hadn't suggested that they were anywhere near a win. It raises a few questions about West Coast, I must admit, on the back of it. But a great performance. And road wins for young teams, and particularly those that have been hit by injury like the Mighty Tigers have been hit, that'll do wonders for their confidence. I think they're still going to be up against it to win most weeks for the rest of the season, I would have thought, compared to perhaps what they were able to do on the weekend. But they're great little moments, and they're things that Adam Uzo can draw upon down the track when he needs a bit of a lift, or he sees the spirit dying a little bit. He can recount those moments, those key moments late in the game where they're able to get back into the game, kick goals to win the game. That's a really positive outcome for the Tigers, I reckon. But the Eagles, they have got some issues, Benny.
Well, they certainly do. So it ended a 12-game losing streak for Richmond. Their last win was round 19 last year against the West Coast Eagles. What about the stat that through to halftime, the West Coast Eagles had lost a club record 19 consecutive quarters? Now, I'm not very good at maths half, but that's more than four games without winning a quarter of football.
Now, I wouldn't have thought there'd be too many teams that have ever had that sort of streak. They probably have been, but certainly recently I wouldn't have thought not five games in a row or five games worth of quarters that you've lost every single one of them. They got the problem. Look, 13, I just saw some numbers on the socials last night. 13 in their last 103 games they've won. That's 90 that they've lost. That's a horrible ratio. 13 and 90 in their last 103 games. Now, I know there's been some rebuilding, lots of rebuilding going on, and they've been at the bottom for a little while, but that is a horrendous outcome for any club at this level of competition.
It certainly is. They did have one good moment, which was Harley Reid with a wonderful goal bursting out of the middle, a couple of bounces, and with the finish. I was thinking about this as I watched it. I think outside of the big specky, the bursting goal out of the middle or a great running goal is probably the second best thing in footy to get you up and out of your chair. But the other one half, Sam Cumming kicked a 50-metre bomb the wrong way. Like some of the great wrong way moments in footy, they're good, aren't they? When people go the wrong way, it is a great sense of mirth for everyone bar the person who committed the offence.
Yeah, the whole world laughs at them, not with them. And that's not a nice place to be for poor old Sammy. I remember my first ever game of basketball. First game, first tip-off, I was 8 or 9 or 7 or 8 or whatever it was. I got the ball from the tip-off, charged to the ring, beautiful layup. But it was the opposition's score. So that was a setback to me in my first. That's why I sort of ended my time in basketball, because I couldn't get back. The crowd were against me from that time on, Benny.
Understandable too. Some of the recent wrong way incidents, Miles Bergman in a showdown in 2025. Michael Riscatelli, who had the great moniker of TAC. I'll let you work that out for yourself. Ben Cunnington has done it recently. I remember Jamie McNamara many, many moons ago when I was in the crowd at a West Coast Eagles game, went the wrong way. So it has happened more than you would expect it to. The next of our games, Geelong and North Melbourne. I don't have too much more to add to this than a takeaway, but everyone has a bogey team half, and it's North Melbourne for Geelong. So this is the longest active winning or losing streak in the AFL, a 15th consecutive win for Geelong over North Melbourne.
Yeah, but I tell you what, I watched most of this game last night. At half time, it was game on. Donkey Kong was a couple of points in it. And even at three-quarter time, it's only 2 or 3 goals, I think, at the time. And then the Cats kicked clear and went bananas in the last quarter and broke the game open. But up until half time, the Kangas were coming, and they put a lot of pressure on the Cats and made them find another way. And Maxie Holmes was one of the real game breakers for them in that game. But you're right, sometimes there is a team that's just got your mettle. Although when it's been happening for that long, as you talked about, you're going through generations of players and coaches, so that something should change eventually. But seemingly this rivalry, well, there's no rivalry because it's all one-way traffic at the moment for the Cats.
Who was your bunny half? Like, which team did you... I don't mean in an arrogant way, but there's always a team you play really, really well against.
Individually, I always play well against North Melbourne, which was ironic because they were one of the power teams. I used to play well against them. And then the Tigers. Oh, my bunnies too. Bunnies are Tigers.
This game did make me think of Sam Kekovic.
Probably got another 7 or 8 teams. 7 or 8 teams I could probably name here. I don't want to do that to the rest of the competition. It's not fair.
Stands to reason. You're nothing if not modest. But it did make me think of Sam Kekovic's gag, many of his after-dinner speeches, where he says that Ron Barassi, the coach, used to let him and Malcolm Blight drive to the game. The rest of the team would get a bus. They like to go the night before, so they'd drive themselves. And winning at halftime, and they lost, and people said, what happened in the second half? He says, the bus arrived.
The bus showed up. Yeah, fantastic.
He loves that one, Sam Kekovic. I've ruined his comparing, unfortunately. We're halfway through the episode, which means it's time for Half Serious. What have you got for us tonight?
Well, a little bit outside the box tonight, Benny. I've been paying a lot of attention to the team selections in the last couple of weeks, and I've noticed there is a crime that's been committed against Australian football fans that we've been conditioned to just accept as real and the normal, when in fact it's one of the great con jobs in the history of football. And I refer to players being managed. I've had a gutful of players being managed. And you know why? I went did some numbers on this. How many games do you reckon Jack Crisp has missed in the last 272? Zero. Zero is the answer for Jack Crisp. Ooh. So do you know how long? His last game he missed was round 18, 2014. All right? That's 12 years ago, Benny. That's 12 years ago that he missed a game of football. I won't stop there. Callum Wilkie hasn't missed a game since he started. He's played 163 straight games. Do you know how many times he's come off the ground this year, Benny?
He hasn't.
Zero. How many times did he come off last year, Benny? Playing every
zero.
Game? Two. And I reckon one of those was a blood rule. So I'm not counting it. So what I don't want to hear or see, unless you stop Pendlebury's 38, unless you're Dane Zorko is 37 or Danger or Tex who's 36, maybe the 35-year-old's going to have some leeway. I don't want to see anyone under the age of 35 missing games of footy because they're being managed because of the stress and the strain of the AFL season. Jack Crisp has been stressing and straining for 12 years straight and hasn't missed a game of footy. So to all the PE boffins, to all the sports science boffins out there, to all the clubs that are trying to pull the wool over our eyes, I say, spare suck of the sauce bottle, no more managed, get the best players out there playing the game, and I'm only half serious.
I like it. That's good. One of your best half. A round of applause for that half serious. You won't see us managed on a Sunday night. We will be here giving great effort, being dog hungry each and every Sunday night as we record this podcast. Just on that, I asked this question, one word answer here. I asked this question on Thursday night to Brett DeLidio on Corbin Middlemass. Scott Pendlebury's games record or Jack Crisp's 272 consecutive games and counting, which is more likely to be broken?
Crisp.
I think I'm Pendlebury. I think Pendles is more likely to be broken.
434. He's going to play 450, 460. Yeah. He's not going to get broken. He might get to 480 or 500.
moving on, the showdown. A one-point win to Adelaide as Braden Cook. He was cooking with the sauce boy, as the young kids say. And I'm not sure I can do that now that I'm a dad, but I tried anyway. The showdown belongs in a primetime slot as a standalone game, was my takeaway half.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. It was extraordinary that it was fixed with a doubleheader on Friday night. Now, I actually quite like the concept of Friday night doubleheaders when they're in different sides of the country and the timelines stack up. I quite like that. And then you get everyone gets their own time. There's no overlap for the rest of the weekend. So I quite like that concept, but not when there's a showdown on, because they are, and it's been widely discussed in the last week. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's the best rivalry in footy. And we saw another cracking addition on Friday night at the Adelaide Oval. It was ridiculous to see the way that game ebbed and flowed and then the finish in the last 10 minutes. It was fantastic. I was absolutely absorbed. I ended up cheering and barracking and watching two teams that I don't really care about too much, but I love to watch good footy and entertaining footy. It was brilliant, and it almost should have a weekend of itself. When we have a bye weekend, you can have the showdown, and then you have the rest of the teams have the week off, and then they can have the week off next week and the rest of the teams can play. That's how good it is. It deserves almost its own weekend. The showdown. Yep. It's so good.
So just some of the numbers surrounding the showdown and just how competitive this game has been over a really long period of time. I think 35% of the showdowns have been decided by inside two goals. So much always they're close games, and we saw that again. Mitch Georgiades too, just quickly, on the longest goal streak in the competition with 30 consecutive games in which he's kicked at least one goal. The other game on Friday night was the Bulldogs and Fremantle. Fremantle winning by 12 points. My takeaway, and I think it was the same as a lot of others, and yours as well, Half, is that Hayden Young is the straw that stirs the drink at Fremantle.
Yeah, we talked about him. I was talking to someone about this preseason, about what sort of year you're expecting from Fremantle Dockers. And my answer was, well, if Hayden Young plays, they can go close. And I couldn't agree more. I love the headline in the paper, though, on Saturday morning, Young and Jackson from the pub across the road from Flinders Street station.
Why haven't I thought of that?
Yeah, exactly right. It was the headline in the paper on Saturday. Young and Jackson worked a treat. Luke Jackson, of course, is a big part of it. But Hayden Young, I like your phrase. He's the straw that stirs the drink, the Frio drink. I like that.
And it mixes exactly it all together.
That. Yep. So when he's out, when you hear about Hayden Young having more concerns with his hamstring, you go, it's not really something you want to hear. I mean, got Max King in trouble at St Kilda with a hamstring injury off his VFL appearance on the weekend. You just don't want to hear about hamstrings for key players. And when Hayden Young misses weeks for hamstring-related issues, then you start to think, how's this going to affect Fremantle? Because when you see him in there, and as you rightly say, he was stirring the drink, bringing it all together for Fremantle on Friday night. He's the difference maker. We talk about Sarong, we talk about Jackson, you can talk about Brayshaw and Tracy and all those guys and Pierce down back. But I reckon I don't think they can win it without Young.
Yep, agreed. Oh, I totally agree. I think his hamstrings will decide how deep they can go in the season. A mutual friend of both of ours, Adam White, tweeted on Friday night, with the game on the line in the last 2 weeks at three-quarter time, these are Shea Bolton's combined stats over the last two fourth terms. 26 disposals, 3 goals, 12 score involvements, 11 contested possessions, 6 clearances, and over 400 metres gained. So that is exactly why they got Shea Bolton. Way back on Thursday night, your old mob, Hawthorn, drew with Collingwood. Everyone's done the overtime debate to death. So I pose you this as my takeaway that will turn into a question. The takeaway is there is a conversation to be had that Nick Watson might be the best player out of the 2023 draft. So if you could redraft 2023 right now, would you take Nick Watson or Harley Reid first?
Whoa.
Or would you at least draft Nick Watson over Harley Reid?
I think Harley's ceiling is going to be quite high. I don't think we're anywhere near that yet. If I've got midfield support, I'm probably drafting Nick Watson. If I need to rebuild from the inside out, I'm probably taking Harley Reid. So I think there's some caveats on that. But
come on, Pickett.
He is only the greats get to wear the number five at Hawthorn, as you well know, Benny. And he is doing an absolute justice at the moment. He was the only reason, really, they were in the game with his class and his finishing, his ability to create for Hawthorn on Thursday night. The rest of the team had a nightmare at the office. It was a horrible night for Hawks watchers. But the Pies were fabulous. To answer your question, I'll think about it. How about that? I'll toss the coin. If I need a midfielder, I'm taking Harley. If I need something else, I'm taking Nick Watson.
Oh, I think I'm still taking Harley. I still believe that it might be a little while coming, but I agree with you. I think it's a higher ceiling for Harley Reid when he really gets going. But gee whiz, like that is to take nothing away from Nick Watson. I thought it was ridiculous they drafted him so high at knee high to a grasshopper, and yet
so
he looks like one of the most dynamic players in the comp. So well he done, Hawthorn.
He's a very, very special player. Yeah, they've nailed that pick. It was pick four or pick five, one of those picks for him.
Yep.
He's a very, very special player, pick five, wearing the number five, of course, one of the greats. Yeah. So I think it's a really positive outcome for the Hawks to see him develop. And he continues. His trajectory is pretty linear at the moment. Now, there'll be some troughs along the way, but he's been pretty linear, and nothing really seems to faze him, which is a positive sign as well.
Yes, no answer on the way out, Half. Do we like the true Sunday night slot?
Love it.
Yep.
It's not a yes. I know it's not a yes, but I love it. I am all for dinner time footy on a Sunday to finish the weekend. I think it's fabulous. And it could become a real family event. Now, for those that want to go and see it, that's slightly problematic with school the next day and that sort of stuff. But for viewers, which seemingly the headquarters team are all about and all care about, Sunday night at the dinner table, now you probably shouldn't watch a TV at dinner at the same time. Have family time is important. But it could be one of the great family evenings, Sunday night watching the footy. I think it's fabulous.
Shouldn't do it, but we all do it. Half, love your work. I've got a plane to catch. This has been ABC AFL Daily. Great work from you.
Go get them.
We'll see you next time. Five drops a week. Get it wherever you get your podcasts.